Thanks for listening to Creature Comforts on the Radio Reading Service of Mississippi. Creature Comforts airs live every Thursday morning at 9 on MPB Think Radio. You can call the show at that time at 877-MPB-RING. Of course, you can always email animals@mpbonline.org. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. You're listening to Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. Kevin Farrell here with Libby Hartfield, Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries and Parks Executive Officer for the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science and State Parks. Dr. Troy Major, veterinarian at the Animal Medical Center in Jackson, is out this week, but we do have a guest in studio. It's Megan Fedrick, who's the Museum Education Coordinator. So what's the grossest thing you've ever seen? This morning, we're going to learn all about grossology. We'll learn all about what's considered to be gross and things you might see in the gross exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. We're looking for your comments and questions this morning. Our phone number is 1-877-MPB-RING. It's 1-877-672-7464. You can send an email to animals@mpbonline.org. We have 205 likes on our Creature Comforts Facebook page. If you're on Facebook and enjoy listening to the show on the radio, we'd certainly appreciate a like on our page when you get a chance. You find links to topics we discuss on air and podcasts of our most recent shows. And if you ever miss part of or all of a Creature Comforts broadcast on Thursday, it does repeat Saturday mornings at 6. Also, an announcement for folks listening to MPB Think Radio in the Jackson area, WMPN-FM. We're having some work done on our tower and antenna this today that begins at 11. So in the Jackson area only, Jackson area listeners, off the air for a couple of hours while we make repairs to our FM transmission tower. So good morning to you both. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are y'all doing?
Good morning. Good.
So, Libby, we're going to talk about one of the upcoming things at the museum, but always lots to talk about. What are some of the other things that are going on at the museum?
Oh, gosh. The aquariums are not to be missed recently. They look great. Lots of interesting things swimming around in there. And the terrariums, of course, look good, so that's worth doing. As far as the nature trails, it's a great time to walk the trails in a lot of ways. But those of you that are residents of Jackson know we've had a lot of sewer leaks around Jackson, and a couple of times we've had leaks behind the building that were bad enough that we've had to close the trails on and off for the last couple, 3 months, which I apologize for. I'm the one that's always telling people to go outside and walk on the trails. And so I would advise that you call the museum before you plan, if you're planning to do the long walk. Now, you can always do those shorter loops up by the museum, and you can walk a little ways from Mays Lake side. But if you're walking all the way between the museum and Mays Lake, give us a call and let you know if it's an all clear, because you don't want to go down there when it smells that bad. Talking about gross things, that's a lot grosser than we want anyone. We don't want anybody to experience that kind of thing when they visit the museum.
As I mentioned, our guest this morning from the museum is Megan Fedrick, the education coordinator. Megan, good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Give us a general idea of what are the sorts of things that you do as education coordinator for the museum.
Oh, my goodness, it varies every day. But we have a wonderful education staff at the museum, and we basically take care of everyone that walks in the door, from school programs to events, teacher workshops. And then we also do outreach education for the entire state of Mississippi. So we go into schools outside of the metro area for free and do programs that focus on Mississippi wildlife.
And I think we've talked about that on the show before, and I think that's great that, you know, we're based physically here in central Mississippi, but the outreach the museum has, it's a benefit for school kids in all parts of the state.
We love for kids to come to the museum, but if you can't make it, we come to you.
Maybe just if you could, if there are some teachers listening out there, how would someone go about trying to arrange a visit to a school that's in another part of the state?
All you have to do is call our museum, 601-576-6000, and there's also, you can email us. Our email addresses are on our website, www.mdwfp.com/museum, and leave a message, talk to me personally, and I'll point him in the direction of the educator that covers their region.
Okay, very good. So we're going to be talking about a new exhibit that's coming up at the museum, I guess. What exactly is grossology?
The study of all things gross. We are so excited. We have been looking at this exhibit for quite some time, and I think we finally talked everybody into getting gross this summer. And it's the only time in your life where you'll go to work and say poop. or fart, and it's okay. And that's part of your conversations and meetings about what you're doing at work. So we laugh at it. Kids go hysterical about those types of things.
Yeah, I can imagine. The kids seem to be fascinated by that, and you're right. A lot of times it's like, don't talk about that. And so now
you're allowed to talk about it and learn the science behind it, why it's important to know about those things.
Well, you know, earlier, Troy and I decided that this was the right radio show of all radio shows for us to talk about it, because we do routinely talk about those things on this show. If you have pets in your home, then you deal with these kind of gross things on a daily basis.
That's right. Yeah.
Kids and animals, you're going to have some of this grossness.
This works out perfectly. Animal grossology.
It's all biology.
You're listening to Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. If you have a question about the exhibit, grossology, maybe what's the grossest thing you've ever seen, if you could be willing to share with us this morning. Also, we always look for any wildlife questions and brushes with wildlife that you've had. Call us to join the conversation at 1-877-MPB-RING. It's 1-877-672-7464. You can also send us an email to animals@mpbonline.org. So, Megan, when does the museum get gross?
We are gross as of last Saturday.
Okay, very good.
And we go through December 30th, so there's quite a nice time period there for you to come and visit. So everything that we're doing from this point on, a lot of our events, our summer camps, are all focusing on animal grossology. We're having gross camp this summer. I mean, we're making fake snot. There's all tons of talk about blood and icky things that it's everyday conversation right now at the museum.
So maybe if you could, without being too graphic, we mentioned a couple. What are some of the other things considered gross for the exhibit?
Well, the way the exhibit is set up is really neat, because you go through different stations of things that are gross and play an interactive game or have a quiz show or learn facts about these things. But it's everything from animals that suck blood, animals that produce slime, animals. There's a whole cow exhibit, which is supposed to be one of the gassiest animals in the world. You can sit and play the game through this large cow of how food goes through its four stomachs and its digestive tract. And at the end, I'm not kidding, if you wait, he lifts his tail and farts, and it is hilarious. But you have to be patient to get to that point. There are four stomachs. So
I noticed the blood-sucking insects were pretty popular. When you think about ticks
and fleas and mosquitoes, and you can pump them up and feel their bodies full of blood on the little interactive station. Yeah. That's pretty gross.
But again, and this is something we've talked about in terms of the museum too, it's, you know, it's a way to engage kids, and it sounds like it'll have a lot of fun. But again, there is some science and some learning behind it all.
Right. Each station has a game or an activity, but it tells you the science fact behind it. You know, why do these animals suck blood? It's their source of food. Can have gas, because these gases have to be released from their body when they eat. Why does a fly vomit on its food? Because it needs to soften it to eat it. But it all sounds gross, but then you kind of start thinking about the facts behind it. You're like, oh, well, that makes sense. It's still gross, but it makes sense. You know,
I've got a couple callers on the line, so let's invite first Cindy, who's called in from Brookhaven this morning. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. I had a dog who we were unhappy with him right before we left for Sunday night church. Came back, could not find him anywhere, and long story short, he ended up under the bed, and he had poo-pooed on my extra Bible.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
Express his opinion of what was going on. Thank you.
All right. That's pretty gross, Cindy. I think that's a good way to start off the hour. let's see. Let's continue on. We've got another caller. Rich is calling in from Gulfport this morning. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. I was up in the old family farm by mountain in the Washita Mountains next to the Ozarks, and walking down a dry branch, and I looked back and saw a large golden owl out in the daytime, and suddenly a huge black snake jumped over the bank and landed right in front of me and slithered away. And I was wondering, do golden owls usually come out in the daytime, or unless they have a like little owlets around there somewhere?
I don't know of a
I'm
golden
lucky it
didn't
owl land on my head.
Yeah, I don't know about a golden owl. Maybe a great horned owl, you think? Or is that what you're talking about?
Did he have feathers on his head that look like big ears?
Pardon me?
Did he look like he had ears on top of his head?
the owl, not the snake.
Well, it was just flying around like protecting something in the daytime, and then that big black snake jumped over the bank and right in front of me and slithered away. So I was wondering if golden owls came out in the daytime unless they have little owlets to protect.
Well, owls are typically nocturnal, but they can be seen during the day at any point. They mostly hunt at night or are active at night, but that does not mean you will not see them during the day. We have barred owls all over the trails behind the museum, and we'll see them out in the trails during the day with school groups. So it's not uncommon to see an owl out during the day.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rich, thanks for the call. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. We're going to take our first break of the hour. When we get back, we'll continue talking about Grossology. It's the current exhibit, the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. Also looking for any wildlife questions and observations that you have for us this morning. Hold off on your pet questions if you would. Dr. Major is not with us this week. The number to call is 1-877-MPB-RING. Our phone number is 1-877-672-7464. Send an email to animals@mpbonline.org. We'll be back with more of the program after this. The hourly weather forecasts on MPB are underwritten by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Mississippi, a partner on the road to wellness. More information at bcbsms.com. It's good to be blue.
Hey, y'all, it's Felder Rushing. I'm the Gestalt Gardener, and I am so pleased to join y'all every week talking about gardening. You know, you don't have to be anybody or join anything to be part of this party. All we're going to do is talk about gardening and garden-related stuff and maybe a little psychology working in at the same time. Let's have a lot of fun on the Gestalt Gardener. Fridays at 9 and Saturdays at 10 on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to Creature Comforts on the Radio Reading Service of Mississippi. Creature Comforts airs live every Thursday morning at 9 on MPB Think Radio. You can call the show at that time at 877-MPB-RING. Of course, you can always email animals@mpbonline.org. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back. You're listening to Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. Kevin Farrell here with Libby Hartfield, Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks Executive Officer for the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science and State Parks. And Megan Fedrick is Museum Education Coordinator. Dr. Major is out this week, so if you have a pet question, if you could hold that off, we'll get Dr. Major back in studio and be able to answer those. Today, though, we're looking for wildlife questions and observations and also talking about the new exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. It's Grossology, about all the gross things that some of our animal friends do. And as Megan mentioned in the first part of the show, you know, it's fun for kids and for adults, too, as well. But also you can learn the science behind that and why they do some of the gross things that we see that they do. Got a couple more callers on the line, so let's continue on. We'll go to Amit. Sam's on the line. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. I wanted to tell you a little anecdote about my beloved office cats, George and Gracie.
Okay.
They were brothers and sisters, but Gracie treated George like, well, she mothered him. And they're both deceased now. But they grew old together, Gracie sometimes got to the point where if she wolfed her food down too fast, she would throw it up. And she would deposit it into a golden steaming heap on my desk. And as it sat there, George would jump up on the desk, and he would look at it for a minute, and then he would turn to Gracie as if to say, "That looks delicious. Are you going to eat that?" And if she didn't object, he would then proceed to chow down on it and lick his lips and just enjoy it thoroughly. So That's pretty much it.
Yes, Sam, another one. That definitely qualifies as a gross story. So thanks. Thanks for sharing on this day as we are talking about grossology, and we've had a couple of gross ones so far. So let's continue on. We'll go next to Canton. Shirley has called in today. Good morning, Shirley.
Hi. Well, this one won't fit in the category of grossology.
Well, that's good. We need a reprieve.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I have a slope on the west side of my house, and I'm getting it, house landscaped. And someone suggested to me that I put ground cover over there. Now, someone else told me that snakes like to hide under ground cover, and I am deathly afraid of snakes. So I'm wondering if, first of all, if that's true, that snakes like to hide under. Secondly, is there a type of ground cover that snakes don't like to hide under?
Well, first off, I guess when you're talking about ground cover, they like to hide under. What they tend to like is like even a hard cover spot, like a piece of tin, some wood, a stack of wood or something like that. It doesn't mean that you have to worry about any plants on the ground.
Yeah, you're talking about for erosion control and the slope, and I think as long as it's neat and clean and not overrun, that you're not going to have the perfect snake home.
If there was like a piece of tin thrown out there, some pieces of wood or something like that, that would be a great thing for them to hide under. But the leaves, that's not going to attract them really any more than anywhere else, so you don't have to worry about that part, Shirley.
Okay, so like ivy or vinca major or vinca minor.
Yeah, you're not any more likely to get snakes under that than you would under any other kind of a bush or anything, yeah.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Yeah, keep your eyes open. And and try to think about your snake phobia a little bit. You might can get a little better with those guys.
What do you like better, snakes or mice?
Neither.
Yeah, that's you're like most people, actually, Shirley, yeah.
All right, yeah. Shirley, thanks for calling in this morning. You're listening to Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. We're talking about the grossology exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. So we're looking for any gross stories that you'd be willing to share with us, any questions about the exhibit that you might have for us, and also wildlife observations and questions. The number is 1-877-MPB-RING. You can reach us when you call 1-877-672-7464. Send an email to animals@mpbonline.org. Got another caller on the line. We'll go to Mobile this time. Frances has called in. Good morning, Frances.
Good morning. I have three owl questions. Number one, I drove up in my yard the other day, and there was obviously very much an owl sitting on my fence post. The fence post is 6x6, and the owl was at least as big around, and it was well over a foot tall, but it was darkly colored. And I had a question of, what kind of owl could that have been? It was gone by the time I got out of the car, so I never got to see it, but the flash is dark, at least a foot tall, and around as a 6x6 post.
No, wait, you're saying, what were you saying about round? You said
it was about the size of a 6x6 post, because it was covered up the entire post of sitting on. So it was a substantial sized owl. Any idea what it could have been?
Well, a great horned owl is a very large animal, yes. It's
so we have those in South Alabama?
Very big. Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have them all over the southeast, yeah. So that's that's definitely our largest owl, and really one of the larger birds that you're going to see. So a great horned owl would be a good guess.
Yeah, it was quite spectacular, and I just was amazed. They're... Number two, pellets, owl pellets, fairly gross. Do you have some of those in the exhibit?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. But that is something that we are very comfortable with. We've been dissecting owl pellets for years. And the truth is that owls cannot digest fur and bones or even feathers from the animals they eat. So usually about 10 hours after they eat, they barf it right back up. And then we give it to the kids and we pick through it and decide what they had for lunch.
Oh, wonderful. And is it true that when owls cannot, when they stop eating, that they basically done for?
When they stop eating, you mean like for the rest of their life?
Well, I mean, when an owl gets sick, it won't eat. And then once it gets sick and won't eat, it does not recover. Somebody told me the other day that once an owl basically has a bad appetite, then it's pretty much dead.
No, I've rehabbed an owl before, and it did stop eating when it was injured, and then as it got better, it started eating again. So I would think,
okay.
I mean, but, you know, basically any animal, if they completely stop eating, they are going to die.
Well, no, but, I understand
yeah.
that part. I was
yeah.
just curious that owls had a different metabolism or whatever
no,
because they
no.
do this burping thing.
No, they are able. They're able to get sick and stop eating for a while and then get well. Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, Francis.
Thank
thanks for calling. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. We're being gross today. We're talking about Grossology, the new exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. Also, looking for your pet, or excuse me, your wildlife observations. Hold off on the pet questions if you would till Dr. Major's back in studio with us. Let's stay on the phone lines here for just a moment. We'll go next to Osaka. Kathleen has called in. Good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
I got a comment on people who are afraid of snakes.
Okay.
This is not a fix-all, but it does work. Snakes smell before they see. You know, they feel vibration and they smell. It's like their way of tasting you. And at old times, and this is folklore, that they used to grow pennyroyal or something with a very strong essential oil, maybe carpet thyme. Both grow less than 6 inches tall as a rule, so there's not a lot of coverage for a snake, and the essential oils tend to aggravate their senses. But you've got to come out at least 3 to 6 feet from around the area you want to protect, whatever is basically the length of an average snake, because they don't want to crawl across it. If it's a short area, they might, you know, kind of cross it. But if it's very condensed and it's a large area, they usually won't.
That's it. I have heard that before, too. I've never tested that out, that pennyroyal tends to discourage snakes. I don't know if that's true.
Well, it definitely does with animals and anything that burrows in the ground. And that's what they used to make old-fashioned pesticides with for treatment of fleas and such. Okay. In fact, you can use bay leaf when you have a large stem and want them to dry. They have a lot of essential oils in it. You can put them around your garden close to your door, and they do kind of deter bugs and fleas.
All right.
And if anybody's had more experience with pennyroyal, then give us a call.
Well, it's very good. It's even good for humans sometimes.
To keep them away?
Oh, boy.
That's interesting.
that's opening that nature growth can of worms now.
Yeah.
Have fun with that.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Bye-bye.
For the natural way there to try to help control snakes. It's a busy day on the phone line, so let's stay on the lines and go to Ocean Springs. Jay has another gross story to share with us. What do you have, Jay?
I have a gross cat story.
Okay.
Now, I've had cats all my life, and male cats get along well. A male and a female will. Orange tabby cats are the most friendly. But the cats that are like oil and water are black female cats. They, all black female cats, they hate each other. And my son has an all-black cat who stays with us sometimes, and my own all-black cat and she, they just hiss. They hate each other. They cannot be in the same room. They occupy opposite sides of the house. And one of them is very creative about her hatred. She goes out and she kills voles and mice and then bites them in half and then leaves the heads in the food dish of the cat that she hates. And that is her way of dissing the cat under whose roof she can't stand to stay. And so I just had to share that story with you. Thanks for hearing me out.
All right.
I'll hang up now.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty good one, Jay. Yeah.
Thanks, Jay, for the story. That's an interesting one there. Go to the dinner table and you see a severed head there in your bowl. That would be a gross, I think, even for a cat. We are talking about Grossology. It's the new exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. We're visiting with our guest, Megan Fedrick, who's the education coordinator. Megan, you mentioned a couple of the interactive exhibits. So there's one with the digestion of a cow, and I think the other one you mentioned was with the mosquitoes. Are there maybe a couple more you could tell us about?
Well, there's a great one on flies and why they vomit on food and how they taste with their feet. There's several. There's one on the Darwin frog, which the frog actually holds the eggs in their throat, and then they belch out the babies when they hatch. So the belching baby frog.
Oh, yeah, that's
fun.
Really a good one.
That
yeah.
one's pretty neat.
Yeah.
There's a pretty neat little section where you can kind of stick your hand into a mystery box and you don't know what you're going to touch, and then guess what it is. So,
I actually wouldn't do that yet. I've not done that. Have you stuck your hand
in
there?
I did that one. You'll make it through. Actually, what we put in our mystery boxes at camp is a little bit worse. So,
okay.
But it's a very large exhibit. It's throughout our exhibit hall and our atrium, so there's a lot of things for kids to do and a lot of really neat facts for them to take home.
And you mentioned that it's on display through December?
Yes.
Okay,
the end
so
of the year.
All summer long. A chance
right.
to get gross at the museum. All right. Back to the phone lines we go. We'll go to Jackson this time. Siobhan is on the line. Good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. I have a question. It's not really dealing with grossology, but what would be a decent temperature to have inside the home during these summer months for pets, for dogs or cats?
Oh, gosh, that's not our area of expertise. We don't have Dr. Major here. So I'm afraid to comment on his topics. You could send us an email and we can forward that on to Troy and get him to answer that for you. Do you mind doing that?
No, that's no problem. No problem.
All right. Yeah, I think he might be back with us, if not next week, the Thursday after. But if you could send us an email and we'll see if we can get that information out to you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to continue talking about grossology. It's the new exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. We're also looking for your gross stories, any gross animal-related things that you want to share with us, and any wildlife questions or observations that you would want to share as well. The number to call is 1-877-MPB-RING. Our phone number is 1-877-672-7464. Send an email to animals@mpbonline.org. We'll be back with more Creature Comforts after this break. Thanks to our new and renewing members of the Foundation for Public Broadcasting in Mississippi, who, with your financial support, have moved from passive listener to active member. You help keep quality radio programs on the air throughout the year.
Hi, this is grassroots host Bill Ellison. You know, after more than 20 years, you'd think I might have run out of Bill Monroe and Doc Watson songs to play. Well, not so. The bluegrass, acoustic, and folk music scene is vibrant with new names like Sarah Jarosz and the Punch Brothers. There are always new stories from Guy Clark and Ramblin' Jack, and legendary bluegrassers Ralph Stanley and Del McCurry are still high and lonesome. And besides, I still find a song from Bill and Doc I've never played. Join me Saturday night at 8 for Grassroots on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to Creature Comforts on the Radio Reading Service of Mississippi. Creature Comforts airs live every Thursday morning at 9 on MPB Think Radio. You can call the show at that time at 877-MPB-RING. Of course, you can always email animals@mpbonline.org. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell here with Libby Hartfield and our guest today, education coordinator from the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science, Megan Fedrick. We're talking about grossology. It's the current exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science, a chance for you to learn about all the gross things in the animal world, but also to understand the science behind them. So, Megan, you know, we've been talking about it, and it does sound like something that kids would really enjoy, but this also sounds like one of those where yes, I'm just going to take my children to, but
right.
The adults probably are going to have as much fun with it as the kids would be.
I think so, too. I think it's a fabulous exhibit for families, because if you bring a family comes in, they're going to have a little more time than a big group, and they can read through all the fun facts, play the games, do the activities involved with this exhibit. We've had our volunteers trained on gross facts, so they'll have carts out in different ways to tie in grossology to Mississippi critters throughout the summer. So it's going to be a great exhibit for adults and children alike.
This is another one of those exhibits that the dads seem to really like, too.
If the moms don't, they're probably not telling the truth.
Yeah, they may like it just as much. Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about vomiting. We've talked about passing gas. What about scat? That's, I guess, a gross thing.
That is one of our favorite terms. If you don't know what scat is, that is the term for animal poop. And that is something that we talk about daily almost, and it doesn't have to do with the grossology exhibit. That is what we talk about as biologists, and especially as educators and having kids in the building, is that how interesting scat is and what you can learn from scat. So it's a perfect clue. It's like CSI of the biology world in terms of learning about an animal. If you find scat outside, what does that tell you? It tells you where an animal's been. If you know what that animal's scat looks like, you know what animal's been there. If you can pick through it or look at it, you know what that animal ate. So I always used to tell my kids when I worked on the road, you know, do y'all notice dirt on your door or around your porch light or on your steps below your front door? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know what that is? No, well, if it's on the wall, it's tree frog poop. And if it's on your patio, it's toad poop. They're like, ew, gross. But it's, you know what's been there because of what they left behind. They left you a clue.
Yeah, I remember in Walmart, they used to have a video that in the hunting section. And it was that very fact that you can, you know, analyze that. And that to me was kind of gross. But again, if you're hunting and there are important facts you can find from that, it is.
Hunting? How do you know if you have mice in your house? I mean, you could be a scatologist, one who studies scat. It could be your career in life.
That might be something you might want to hold from your parents until maybe you graduate, though.
That's right. You paid for what?
Got a couple more phone calls, so let's continue on. Let's go to Greenville this time. Gloria has called in. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning.
What do you have for us?
Well, I was just wondering, every hunter I have talked to are so excited because it's going to be just rifle season. Is that true?
It's going to be what? I couldn't hear what you
said. Rifle season. There's not going to be any, you can just start out with regular rifle.
During the normal primitive weapon season that usually runs from around December 2nd to December 15th on private lands, it will be a gun season this year.
Okay, so muzzle-loading season.
That's the second one. That's usually around. I don't have the digest in front of me, but usually between December 2nd and 15th on private lands, that will be a gun season this year. But check online at mdwfp.com and pull up the seasons and dates for this year, so you can have the exact time correct.
Okay, so they've not changed the law. It's not going to be just rifle season year-round.
No, there's still archery and everything else, but pull up and get the correct dates. I don't have them off the top of my head.
Okay.
There is a little change with that section.
These little hunters that they can't just go out there during muzzle-loading season with a rifle.
Well, they need to check their digest, too.
All right. Thank you, darling.
No, yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Gloria. Let's stay on the phone lines. We've got a fish question. Looks like it comes from Keith in Natchez. Good morning, Keith.
I've got a question. I'm trying to identify a fish that I actually photographed it on Sunday, and it was caught by a great egret. And I've got several frames I can send you, for a follow up. But I have no idea what it is, and I've not been able to find out by researching, different ichthyology sites. But it looks like a type of needle fish. It most closely resembles a gar, and this great egret's got it clamped down in its beak, and it's a long, skinny fish, but it's got long jaws like a gar would have, and it's got a dorsolateral black line that runs from just behind the gill area, just behind the eye, all the way down to the tail, and then the tail kind of looks like a leaf on a clover.
Is it a pickerel?
I'm sorry?
Maybe a pickerel?
No, it's not a pickerel. It's in the needlefish or in the, I can't remember the genus. So it's in the gar family, I would think.
Send us a picture. Yeah, that sounds like it. And now where
did you catch it?
Yeah, where was it?
Well, I photographed it on Old River, which surrounds, it's one of the old oxbows.
Yeah, there in the Old Pearl.
That surrounds the area directly across the river from Natchez, the Giles Island area. So it's part of the Mississippi riverine system. But it's got the fish has got a white belly, and it's got this black medial. I guess it's the flank, the black line, and then on top of the black line is this kind of a dorsolateral, kind of a bronze color. So it's actually quite an attractive fish, and then the tail on it is sort of spatulate, but it's got a single lobe at the end, so it kind of looks like a leaf off of a, you know, four-leaf clover shaped like that, with a pointed end on it, and the tail is spotted. It's more or less translucent, and it's spotted. And it does not look like a gar. It doesn't resemble a gar. It looks more like a type of needlefish, but none of the needlefish that I've been able to find online seem to occur in the Mississippi drainage. So that's why I was...
Yeah, in fresh water, you're not usually going to find... We just need to see a picture of that. Yeah. Send us... It sounds like you've got some good pictures, right?
Yeah, we're trying to develop a birding ecotourism program down here, and I've been out getting a lot of the local stuff during the spring migration. I've gotten some incredible stuff this year.
Oh, great! And that's good to get that that great horned. Now you got the you were it was a great blue heron that had it.
Egret.
No, this is a great egret.
A great egret. Okay.
Yeah, I could go back. Appeared to me to be a female, but anyway, she was feeding in the same area for about an hour, and I was actually photographing Prosonotary warblers in the area, and she was so active, I started sort of focusing on her, and she caught three or four of these things, and it was in flooded, one of these aquatic plants, green plant that fills in the shoreline mm-hmm. there when, you know, you get some high water, and she was just ambling along, and she caught several of them, and she was quite distant from me, but when I zoom on the image, you can definitely see that it's got long jaws like a gar would have, both the upper and lower mandible, and then it's sort of got a reddish eye, but I don't have a good enough magnification of it where I could just make an absolute, that's definitely a spotted gar, which in fact it's not. I can tell it's not a spotted gar or a, I don't know my fish that well, not a long-nosed gar, not an alligator gar. It's something else.
Right. Okay, great. Well, send us a picture then. That'll be interesting to see.
Email it to animals@mpbonline.org. We'll forward over to the folks at the museum, and they will see if we
if you do it right now, we may be able to go ahead and give you a name before we're off the air. Yeah.
All right, Keith. So, yeah, again, it's animals@mpbonline.org. Thanks for calling in. Let's continue on the phone lines. We'll go next to Karen in Olive Branch. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. I was wondering if the Grossology exhibit has anything on the animal. I think it's the civet cat, where they make that rare, expensive coffee from the beans it's ingested and excreted.
Ah.
No, but that's a great thing to bring up during camp this summer.
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. People pay a lot of money for coffee that this cat has pooped out.
That's right.
All right.
Okay. That's
Karen,
what I wanted to ask about. Thanks, y'all.
Great. Thanks for adding that to the conversation this morning. So that, again, they can't digest it, so it's excreted, and then I guess it has some sort of flavor.
Which is how many seeds are planted through bird poop.
Yeah,
if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have a lot of the plants we have today.
I just got a message from Chris Zakow, the Museum Foundation president. She said she had gotten in a discussion at the exhibit opening about how many different words there were for scat or poop. Why is that? I guess people are struggling with a nicer way to say
that's
it.
That's right. And it depends where you grew up, where you lived. Different parts of the state of Mississippi, kids have different words of what they called it growing up.
And sometimes even families have kind of different little euphemisms.
That's true. Tons of them.
That's interesting. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it's gross, so we're trying to think of a polite way to discuss
it. Yeah, looking for a nicer way to talk about it. Yeah. That's an ongoing
situation.
Battle in language, yes, to find just the right word.
Got another call on the line. Let's go to Dee this time. Dee's called in. Good morning, Dee.
Good morning. I have a question for y'all. I had gotten some rather nice birdhouses in Waveland, and my husband hung them for me. And they don't have any little perch on the front, and I'm not sure if I've seen birds go in and out of them or not. They do have the door lifts up in the front to be able to clean them. But I don't want to have the nest fall out or disturb the parents. And I was just wondering, is there any way to tell if the houses are occupied? I mean, other than obviously seeing birds go in and out of them.
That's the very best way, is to watch and see if they're going in and out. It's not a terrible thing to peek in there if you don't disturb them. But if you really want to look in, I've done that often just to check my nests. And if it opens easily, you don't want to, you know, jar them or, you know, like you say, knock the eggs out.
But I don't know if the nest would, you know, become disturbed if I did that, because the whole door lifts up.
Oh, okay. So you're thinking, yeah, it would open up the whole front of the...
Yes.
Yeah, that might be hard. I would say get you a cup of coffee and sit there and watch for just a few minutes. It'll probably be the most pleasant part of your day to watch that.
Well, they're out there near my garden, and I feel compelled to weed while I'm out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to sit still. You know, bird watching is a time for meditation sometimes. Sit still and watch just a few minutes, and you might get rewarded with a wonderful little bluebird or something else. You know, tufted titmice, chickadees, lots of birds. In fact, prothonotary warblers like those boxes that are called bluebird boxes.
All right, Dee, thanks for the call. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. We need to take our final break this hour. When we get back, we'll continue talking about gross things that are being featured at the museum, and also looking for your input, a gross story that you want to share with us, or maybe a question or comment about the wildlife that you see in and around your neighborhoods. The number to call is 1-877-MPB-RING. Our phone number is 1-877-672-7464. Send an email to animals@mpbonline.org. Back to wrap up the program after this.
MPB's Education Department is engaging at-risk youth through its Can I Kick It projects. Students realize the power of voice and recognize the clarity of vision as they create documentaries to address the dropout crisis. MPB, an American graduate champion.
If you're in the Delta and are an MPB member, you're invited to a meet-and-greet event on Thursday, May 29th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Join us at the Delta Blues Museum at 1 Blues Alley in Clarksdale for a bite to eat, a chance to socialize with other MPB members, and meet members of the MPB radio staff. You can RSVP at mpbonline.org/meet-and-greet. We hope to see you there.
Thanks for listening to Creature Comforts on the Radio Reading Service of Mississippi. Creature Comforts airs live every Thursday morning at 9 on MPB Think Radio. You can call the show at that time at 877-MPB-RING. Of course, you can always email animals@mpbonline.org. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell, here with Libby Hartfield, Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks Executive Officer for the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science and State Parks, and from the museum, the Education Coordinator, Megan Fedrick. We're talking today about grossology. It's the latest exhibit at the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. It will be on display through the end of the year, so all through the summer, a chance to let your kids enjoy grossness at the museum, but also learn the science behind the gross things that we see in the animal kingdom as well. You know, you talked about, you know, Megan, that sometimes the gross stuff is actually beneficial, as you know, birds passing seeds along through their excrement. What about the dung beetle? That sounds gross enough, just the name. What can you tell us about that?
Well, they're coprophages, which means they eat poop. That's a good, fun word to learn. But dung beetles are awesome. And people always see cartoons or different things or think about dung beetles in Africa. There's actually road signs that you have to break for dung beetles in Africa. But we have them right here. My husband and I saw one last month just down the road from our house. This little guy, just a little ball of poop about the size of a big marble, just doing his business with business, I guess. There's another word for it right there. Yeah. But they eat poop, they move it out of our way, they kind of clean up the environment for us, and they roll it up and take it to their nest to feed their babies. So they're like little janitors moving poop out of the way. And people, you know, farmers in Texas bring them in to help clean up cow patties.
Hmm. They can. I've heard they can move an incredible amount of poop in a pretty short time. Isn't that amazing? You know, we need some time-lapse photography. Yeah. Actually, I think there is online. I've seen a film, a video, I think it's on YouTube, of showing a dung beetle and how quick they can work. And they usually make a little tunnel and take it down below, so they get it off the scene, away from your shoes.
That's right. So they're very helpful. What they're doing looks gross, but they're keeping it away from us. That's
nice. In fact, now the Egyptians that scarab beetle, and they thought they were a sacred animal.
They idolized. That's right. They idolized
them. Put them in lots of art and wore jewelry to them. We just got to get on board with the dung beetles, huh?
So as we mentioned, this is throughout the summer. Could you maybe give us just a heads up on a couple of the special activities that will be planned with the exhibit?
Yes, right now we are planning camp. So if you have kids going into kindergarten through fifth grade, we still have openings for the second, third, and fourth week of June. You can actually register online if you go to our website. Junior Naturalist Camp, which is the first week of June, is full already. So we are overloaded with junior high kids right now. But so camp will be gross related all summer long. Our Fun Fridays, which start the first week in June and go through the last Friday in July, are all gross related. So everything from bloodsuckers to dookie lovers to some wonderful names for those Fun Friday activities. And that's every Friday, June and July, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Let's see what else. We are having a kind of a 4th of July-ish event this year. It's not going to be on the 4th. It'll be on the 5th. And we're going to have some gross activities at the museum that day. I believe we're going to have Ooblik that vibrates to the Star Spangled Banner. So don't miss that.
Ooblik.
That's right. So we'll probably have the kids make some Star Spangled Snot. Something you can't do without at the 4th of July.
You're right. That's a July celebration, right? And who knows? It could be an annual event for maybe if the kids to learn how to do that.
That's true.
Oh, and we do have to mention Snake Day. We'll talk more about it next week.
And a lot of people think Snake Day is gross, but I don't see the gross in that. But we're too much biology in us. But yeah. That's June 3rd, Snake Day, a great event we have each year.
Yeah, I went to Snake Day once. That's great, and it's amazing. You know, love or hate him, I think everybody at least wants to go learn about him. So either you go and you're scared to death or go and you're real interested, but we are definitely fascinated by snakes.
That is true.
Let's go back to the phone lines, and to Raymond we go. Bill has called in. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. I have kind of an interesting story, a wildlife story. And what we were doing, a bird flew into the window of our home, and I heard a thud and looked out on the deck and saw this little bird laying on the deck. Just a minute later, another bird came down, walked around the bird, and then flew off. About another minute later, the bird came back with a larger bird, obviously probably an adult bird, and this adult got on top of the bird that was laying on the deck and started jumping up and down on it. After I did that for, I don't know, half a minute, a minute or something, the other little bird started, it was obvious. I was afraid it was dead, but it feeling, looked like it feeling better and everything. I waited a couple of minutes and went out on the deck and picked up the little bird, and it was, it turned over and stood up in my hand, and then it flew down into the grass. Well, I let it rest for a couple of minutes, and then walked towards it, and it flew up into the trees. It's just the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen.
Obviously, that big bird is taking CPR.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it seemed like.
Now, can you describe kind of, because the thing is, an adult bird, like if you've got one species, and a cardinal, by the time a baby cardinal flies, he's every bit as big as his parents. A bird usually can't fly, so they generally, if a baby bird, of course, starts off smaller, but by the time they're flying around, they're the same size.
Right.
So the bigger one, was it from a different species? Did they all three look alike?
No, they all three looked alike, and I'm not a good bird watcher, so I could not identify it, but it had a little. They had a little bit of yellow on them, and the adult bird. I'm calling it an adult bird. It just was bigger than the other two birds.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't greatly bigger or anything like that. But it was a little bit bigger, and he said, whoever it was or whatever it was seemed to know what he was doing. I mean, he came down on the deck, and he got on top of the other bird and then started jumping up and down on it. I wish I had been able to take a video of it or something.
Well, you had a great experience. You know, watching birds fledge, and I got to do that a couple of times last weekend. I watched some birds fledging in my yard. Prothonotaries once, and then just some little Carolina wrens one
Carolina
time.
Rins.
But they really do some unusual things, and it's generally it'll be both the parents encouraging all these babies to fly. And they'll hit the ground oftentimes during this process, and it could have been that that's something going on with the fledging process, and an adult was encouraging that little one to fly.
Sounds like it worked out well, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it did. I thought the little fella, you know, hit the window. At first, I thought he was dead, you know, and but it just, like I said, just amazing.
Well, it might have been that he was just learning to fly. That was his first, what became fledging, when they're just leaving the nest and going to fly. And that's an important time to keep your pets away from them.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Bill, thanks for sharing your story with us. This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. We're almost out of time. Megan, would you say, based on your study of grossology, is there what you would consider to be the grossest animal?
Oh, I told you, being a biologist, we don't think of gross in the same way, and it's so strange, but I'm not a roach fan.
Ah,
but
yes.
There's not, other people don't think that's the grossest thing, but you put one on the floor next to me right here, I'd probably run away. But snakes and everything else are fine.
Yeah, we have a herpetologist that has a strong dislike of spiders that we always find odd because...
That's true.
Yeah. Many people prefer spiders
over
snakes,
pick a bug over a snake any day.
I'm curious, though. Have we found anything useful for a roach, that a roach does?
They carry very little disease. I guess
that's
benign.
Yeah, they're not as bad as people think they are, but something creeps me out about... The hissing cockroach I'm fine with.
Yes.
The roaches found around here, I don't want to be near.
Exactly. I'm exactly... I'm fine with is a little too much, but I agree with you. I'm a little more grossed out and scared of the regular roach than those big ones.
In college, one of my jobs for a while, I had to take care of a roach colony, and we were injecting them with something that was radioactive. I can't remember exactly what it was now. Oh, radioactive iodine. And then we would grind up the body and find out where it went. But I got so that I could reach in there and with my bare hands and grab the big roach and inject it with the iodine.
No.
But so I've kind of overcome that fear. But at first it was like, oh no, gag! I cannot do this.
No.
Fed them cat food, too. That was a weird thing.
Just a reminder for MPB Think Radio listeners in the Jackson area, beginning today at 11, we've got some work that we need to do on our antenna and tower. So we'll be off the air in the Jackson area only for a couple of hours on MPB Think Radio. That'll wrap us up for today. Creature Comforts is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science, funding provided in part by the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science Foundation and contributions from listeners like you. Our producer is Jonas Adams, and our call screener is Sharita Brent. For Libby Hartfield and Megan Fedrick, I'm Kevin Farrell. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's MPB's Season Pass with Jay White.
This is MPB Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.